Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
My name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, January 19th, 2024. Midland Independent School District receives high marks for financial integrity, lags behind in scores and graduation, by Ben Schaefer. MISD received high marks for financial integrity, but lags the state in grade performance scores and graduation rates, according to its 2022-2023 annual performance report presented Tuesday. The Texas Education Code requires the board to publish an annual performance report and make the report available to the public within 90 days of the release of the Texas Academic Performance Report, according to Associate Superintendent Ashley Osborne. The Texas Academic Performance Report was released on December 15th. Osborne, Executive Director of School Leadership Shannon Torres, and Chief Financial Officer Tucker Durham presented several sections of the 2022 through 2023 annual report. Osborne shared that MISD remains an accredited school district for 2023 through 2024 by the Texas Education Agency. As of January 2023, the Texas Academic Performance Report does not include A through F ratings for accountability or special education determination status. Osborne shared that MISD received an A rating for the 2023 Financial Integrity Rating System of Texas, which ensures that Texas public schools are held accountable for the quality of their financial management practices, according to the Texas Education Agency. The MISD board approved CANPRIS performance objectives last fall, which are the current year's plans for improvement, according to Osborne. The full list of approved campus performance objectives can be found on the MISD website. Our campuses do review those plans frequently to ensure they are making progress, Osborne said. Executive Director of School Leadership discussed violent and criminal incidences on MISD campuses during the 2022 through 2023 school year. Torres shared that the violent and criminal incident information is used by the Texas Education Agency to identify campuses in the state that are considered a persistently dangerous school. No MISD campuses were identified as persistently dangerous. The report includes 13 felony incidents in MISD in 2022 through 2023, with 12 Title V off-campus felonies and 4 non-title off-campus felonies. There were 230 controlled substance-related violations, 56 alcohol violations, and 59 incidents labeled terroristic threats. Associate Superintendent Ashley Osborne shared that MISD remains an accredited school district for 2023 through 2024 by the Texas Education Agency. District 7 trustee Brian Murray, who took over the position again on Tuesday, asked about the violent and criminal incidences on campuses. Controlled substances were up 20%. Aggravated assault against non-employee volunteers was up 116%, and felony controlled substance violations were up 145%. What I campaigned on and what I knew when we left was that we had upped the police force and we were doing some different things to handle some of those situations. But since they were large numbers, I just wanted us to maybe get an update on the police staff and what we're doing, Murray said. MISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard said that starting March 1st of last year, MISD became stricter in its enforcement of its student code of conduct, which led to higher numbers of violent or criminal reports. Howard also said two new MISD police officers were recently sworn in. It will have 26 officers when it onboards all the officers they have in the queue. Just on those particular incidents you were talking about, When you increase presence and you are around and you are really honing in on that discipline, we're going to see those increased numbers. On top of the THC becoming a felony-controlled substance, that is why you see that number higher as well, Torres said. The Texas Academic Performance Report includes a range of information. First, Osborne shared enrollment trends within the school district. In 2021, MISD enrollment numbers were at 25,579. In 2022, enrollment grew to 26,398. It was reported Tuesday that 2023 enrollment is 27,728. In the 2022-23 TAPR report, there was a diagram included that showed how MISD fared against the region and the state when it came to meeting grade-level performance scores in the STAR, or end-of-course performance. MISD trended at or above Region 18 in all tested content areas when looking at meets grade level, or above performance, according to the report. MISD lagged behind the state in the same category across all tested areas, the report states. According to the report, MISD students can demonstrate college, career, or military readiness various ways, including earning minimum scores on national college entrance exams, completing college-level classes in high school, or earning a qualifying industry credential. The MISD College, Career, and Military Readiness (CCMR) report showed a 3% increase in CCMR annual graduates in the 2022 graduating class compared to the 2021 graduating class. Torres said MISD projects an 18% increase in that category for the same class of 2023. The graduation rate for MISD, the region, and the state decreased in 2022. MISD's graduation rate in 2022 was 85.8%. The graduation rate statewide was 89.7%, the report states. Midland College to join Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone, County Agreement to be voted on Monday, by Ben Schaefer. The Midland College Board of Trustees voted to participate in the Downtown Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone during its meeting on Tuesday. A tax increment reinvestment zone is a real property where tax collected is set aside to fund projects. According to the City of Midland, the TIRZ could provide as much as $120 million in revenue from participating downtown properties over a 30-year term. Those investments will be used for downtown improvement projects. Projects include alley revitalization, specifically alleys adjacent to the DoubleTree by Hilton, Midland Plaza, and Basin PBS. Downtown lighting projects, tree, signs, and string lighting at Colorado and Wall Street, Wall and Main Street. Streetscape enhancements, cyclist pedestrian improvements, landscape improvements, parklets, public art, street furniture, signage. Parking on street, better use of public garages, incorporate up to 1,800 privately owned surface lots like those by the downtown library, and improving parking lighting and signage. Wayfinding signs, creating paths to landmarks, identifying paths to downtown parking, and identifying various districts. Trash projects, trash pickup, additional receptacles. With the Midland College Board voting in favor on Tuesday, both the Midland County Hospital District and the college have joined the City of Midland with an endorsement of the TIRZ, the city stated. On January 22nd, Midland County Commissioners, who have already heard a presentation on the downtown tax zone in mid-December, will act on a TIRZ agreement and the resolution with the City of Midland according to its agenda. In December, County Commissioners expressed their support for the proposed downtown improvements. Precinct 2 Commissioner Jeff Somers said he was looking forward to seeing an upgrade to downtown Midland. County Judge Terry Johnson said these kinds of downtown improvements are long overdue. When you look at any established or vibrant city that is succeeding in any way, their downtown space is a vibrant space, City Director of Engineering Gabriel McClelland told the Midland College Board Tuesday. The city has already established the boundary that the tax zone will encapsulate. The next step in the process, according to McClelland, is for the city to establish a TIRZ board, and the TIRZ board will include up to 2 members from each participating taxing entity. The TIRZ board will work with the city on approving downtown projects that would be funded with TIRZ money, McClelland said. The city reported that the TIRZ also provides a funding source for the Centennial Entertainment Overlay District, an active and vibrant core of downtown venues. National Transportation Safety Board report blames meth use for crash that killed 9 by B.K. Richter. Impairment from methamphetamine use was determined to be the cause of the crash that claimed the lives of 9 people, including members of the University of Southwest golf team on March 15, 2022 in Andrews, Texas. According to the final report issued by the NTSB in December 2023, it was determined that the 38-year-old driver of the pickup truck crossed into the oncoming lane, colliding with a van carrying members of the golf team, and the report indicates the pickup driver was at fault. In the 15-page final report, NTSB provided a summary of the pickup driver's driving record. A description of the driver is provided. The 38-year-old driver held a Texas Class C driver's license with no endorsements or restrictions. His driving history shows numerous traffic violations, some of which occurred before he obtained his driver's license. In the 10 years before the crash, the pickup truck driver had 23 traffic violations, 10 of which related to driving without a license or with a suspended license, and 9 of which were for speeding. One of the speeding violations from 2016 involved traveling 105 miles per hour in a 75 mile per hour zone. The pickup truck driver had one driving while intoxicated violation that occurred in 2006. His most recent license suspension occurred in May of 2018. The license remained suspended until May of 2019. The driver was involved in one other crash, which occurred in 2012. The post-mortem toxicology testing of the pickup driver's femoral blood, as performed by NMS Labs, did identify methamphetamine at a concentration of 1,900 nanograms per milliliter, and amphetamine, a methamphetamine metabolite, at a concentration of 250 nanograms per milliliter. NTSB also confirmed additional testing from the pickup driver's femoral blood sample. At the NTSB's request, the Federal Aviation Administration Forensic Sciences Laboratory also tested the pickup truck driver's femoral blood for methamphetamine and amphetamine, identifying them at 1,949 nanograms per milliliter and at 185 nanograms per milliliter, respectively. The NTSB concluded that driving above the speed limit or too fast for conditions is dangerous, but speeding is particularly dangerous when combined with impairment. In 2021, about 60% of road fatalities in the United States were attributed to speeding and/or alcohol impairment, the NTSB noted. The crash occurred on Farm to Market Road 1788, approximately a half mile south of State Highway 115 in Andrews County. The NTSB report summarizes the traffic accident that occurred on March 12, 2022, between a 2007 Dodge Ram 2500 pickup truck and a 2017 Ford Transit 350 van towing a 2019 Salvation trailer. According to the NTSB report, the 2007 Dodge Ram 2500 pickup truck was traveling southbound, crossed the center line of traffic, and then collided nearly head-on with the northbound 2017 Ford Transit 350 van. The impact of the collision between the vehicles began a post-crash fire, which consumed both the van and the pickup truck, Seven occupants of the van and two occupants of the pickup truck died, and two van passengers were also seriously injured. The 38-year-old driver held a Texas Class C driver's license with no endorsements or restrictions. His driving history shows numerous traffic violations, some of which occurred before he obtained his driver's license, according to the NTSB report. Midland College Board votes to restructure early childhood degree, by Ben Schaefer. The Midland College Board of Trustees voted to close and restructure their Early Childhood Education Baccalaureate program and partner with the University of Texas Permian Basin during their meeting on Tuesday. In November 2021, Midland College announced its offering of a bachelor's degree in early childhood education that was designed to lead to Texas teacher certification from early childhood classes to third grade. Midland College President Damon Kennedy said the school hasn't been seeing the growth successes it had hoped to see by implementing the program. "We have a really unique opportunity, I think, to transform the way in which we recruit, retain, and then take our students through teacher certification," Kennedy said Tuesday. Although the plan, in its entirety, will be fleshed out over the course of the spring semester, Midland College will be able to allocate more resources to recruitment and retention through its partnership with UTPB, according to Kennedy. "Students in the early childhood education space will take classes at Midland College. Students who are recruited out of MISD would most likely participate in hybrid online and on-campus classes at UTPB, according to Kennedy. The official plan is not worked out in its entirety. Kennedy said the college will retain every member of faculty and staff currently in the program through the change. He added that the college will discuss whether students currently in the program should complete it with Midland College or UTPB. Kennedy said that Midland College will continue to utilize the space built on campus for education classes. "We're going to continue to utilize that, not exclusively, but almost exclusively for education courses. So some UTPB courses could be taught here. We're going to continue to teach our general education and education-specific courses there in the building," Kennedy said. The program has 13 students in it right now. Kennedy said the ultimate goal is to increase the number of students who complete the program and mold Midland teachers in the local area. "This is going to create a lot of flexibility for students that we don't have built into our program at this point," Kennedy said. Opinion: investing in ourselves benefits the entire Midland community. Jeff Beard, guest columnist. I have been fortunate to call Midland home for nearly 40 years, and one of the aspects I appreciate most about this town is its commitment to getting things done. Rooted in the resilience and determination of our founding families, this tenacity has been a constant thread throughout our history. Midland is not just a community, it's a community that invests. In considering investments, we have an outstanding project on the horizon, calling for both private and public investments to address a need in our community. This venture demands dedication and time, and its impact will have an impact for decades to come. That investment is the proposed 135-room, full-service hotel in downtown Midland. This hotel is not merely an expenditure. It is a strategic investment with multifaceted returns that benefit both the local community and the broader economic landscape. Here are several reasons to support the notion that this use of public and private funds is a judicious and forward-thinking move. Economic stimulus and job creation. The hotel project is anticipated to infuse significant economic stimulus into Midland. Beyond the direct impact of construction jobs, the completed hotel will generate employment opportunities in hospitality, retail, and other related sectors. A thriving downtown with increased foot traffic also creates demand for various goods and services, fostering a ripple effect in job creation. Increased tax revenue. While a portion of the initial investment, approximately 35%, is made using Midland Development Corporation and the City of Midland, the long-term returns in the form of tax revenue are substantial. The estimated $67 million in added tax revenue over the next 22 years, 2 years of development and first 20 years of operation, derived from property taxes, sales taxes, and hotel occupancy taxes, represents a return on the city's initial financial commitment of $53.3 million. Keep in mind that a lot of those tax dollars are coming from out-of-town visitors. Property value enhancement. The presence of a full-service hotel is expected to encourage new investments and property updates in downtown Midland. This, in turn, will escalate property values, contributing to a more robust tax base for the city. A flourishing downtown area tends to attract further private investments, amplifying the positive impact on property values. Competitive and tourism growth. The hotel enhances Midland's competitiveness as a destination for conferences, events, and regional tourism. This not only bolsters the local economy, but also positions Midland as an attractive and competitive city in the broader region. Increased tourism translates to additional spending on local businesses, further contributing to economic growth. Retaining and attracting major employers. A full-service hotel is a key amenity for major employers headquartered in Midland, such as Diamondback Energy, Endeavor Energy, and Permian Resources. Downtown investment signals the city's commitment to retaining these employers by providing essential amenities for their employees, partners, and vendors. This, in turn, safeguards and fosters the city's economic core. City brand enhancement. A vibrant downtown area with quality accommodations elevates Midland's profile and improves its national brand. This positive perception can attract not only business travelers, but also potential residents and investors, further contributing to the city's long-term prosperity. Strategic urban development. Investing in a convention center hotel aligns with the broader vision of strategic urban development. Cities often invest in such projects as catalysts for downtown revitalization, recognizing them as powerful economic engines that drive growth, attract businesses, and enhance overall urban appeal. No additional tax burden. Importantly, the project has been structured to avoid burdening taxpayers with additional or increased taxes. The tax incentives provided by the City of Midland are performance-based, ensuring that the project only receives rebate proportional to its positive impact on property value, sales, and occupancy. In summary, the investment of dollars in the proposed hotel is a calculated and prudent move that leverages funds to catalyze economic growth, job creation, and long-term financial returns for the benefit of the entire Midland community. Opinion. A phone call that allowed her a chance to change her life, by Lisa Bounds, guest columnist. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. The following story was submitted to MRT and may be too graphic for some audiences. At the age of 3 years old, I was unwanted, unloved, neglected, and bullied by my dysfunctional family and by the kids at school. I always knew inside that Jesus was my only friend. One day, I spoke out about the sexual abuse that had happened to me. Then I was disowned by my entire abusive family. There I was, all alone, on the streets at age 16. I thought I was finally free. Boy, was I naive. Chronic homelessness eventually took its toll on me. My grandparents took me in periodically and began to teach me about a real and powerful God. But one day we got into an argument and they put me back out on the streets. I eventually fell into a human trafficking ring where I was forced into prostitution, had my identity stolen, got beat up and raped a lot, got addicted to drugs, and even went to jail a few times where I was safe for a little while. I was finally ready to face the past and figure out what this aching and longing was all about, to face my fears and finish up my time here on earth. Some days I was ready to give up on myself and my life and go be with Jesus. I was kept mostly in solitude for about 4 years. I wasn't allowed to own anything, but I had snuck a Bible from the jail. I read and prayed day and night. Gradually, Jesus was revealing himself and began speaking and moving over my situation in ways I couldn't imagine. At that time, I was finding the truth in his word. I couldn't trust anyone else, though. I tried to tell the hospital, the judge, the police, my neighbors, anybody that would listen. They all chose to believe I was crazy, as my abusers told them. Nobody seemed to care about what I was going through. I think they cared about their own family and safety and feared knowing the truth about our crazy little town. The rest of my story is truly unbelievable. I now believe all things are possible with God. The phone call. My cell phone rang with a number I did not recognize. The person on the other end identified themselves as a social worker at a hospital in another city. He had received my contact information from a team member who heard me speak about human trafficking. He then began telling me details surrounding the circumstances of a young lady they had in the hospital burn unit. From the little bit of information they could coax out of her, it appeared that she had been forced into a vehicle and set on fire. Law enforcement had charged her with disorderly conduct as she was loaded into an ambulance and then driven across the state line to a medical center. Even the officers stated her situation appeared to be a bit sketchy, but they had to charge her due to the statements presented by the man on the scene with her. They hoped that by charging her with something, they could get her out of the situation safely. The hospital team had been working to orchestrate resources for her continuum of care, but had not been able to uncover any family, friends, or resources for her. She had no identification and was unable or unwilling to verbalize her pain, needs, or wishes. The social worker was calling me, hoping that I would be willing to lend advice and resources. Of course, I was happy to help. We set up a Zoom meeting to visit with the young lady. The conversation was short and limited. Even after an additional 2 meetings, I had no doubt she had been trafficked based on the pieces of her story I had been able to uncover. After a couple of weeks went by, my phone rang again. I was asked if we could provide services for her. 2 days later, she arrived at the village. What began to unfold when she was offered safety and security was a depiction of darkness and violence. The day she was recovered, her trafficker, the man on site, offered her 2 ways to die because she no longer brought in the money she used to when she was younger. Her options were to either kneel on the porch and die by gunshot to the head or be set on fire. She chose to kneel. Her trafficker laughed and said, "That really isn't fun for me. Go get in the vehicle." As she began to trust the Reflection Ministries team, she shared more details about her story. She had been locked in a room of a house for 3.5 years with only a Bible. No bed, no clothing, no blanket, nothing. Her front teeth had been knocked out over time by her trafficker, and he limited her access to food and basic care. The only time she was allowed out was to sell her, and then she was locked up again. Feeling hopeless, she felt this would be where she died. Her time in the Reflection Program has now surpassed 2 years. She has settled into discovering herself, her likes, her dreams, finally, her hopes. One of the things she has discovered is her desire to express herself through writing music and playing the guitar. Recently, I was given an envelope with a note that said, "Miss Lisa, this song was written for you." Here are a few lines of the song that she wrote that reflect her heartbeat as she continues to heal. You could tell by my reflection I was so very broken. All the rage and all the shame of a life I didn't choose. You could see all the rejection. But in your eyes, I've got a friend. And this is why the Reflection Team shows up every day to walk a path of healing, wholeness, and wellness with these courageous individuals. Thank you for the continued prayers, encouragement, and generous support as we see lives restored daily. For more information on Reflection Ministries of Texas, visit reflectionministriestex.org. Uvalde shooting. Department of Justice. Police response was riddled with failures. By Eric Tucker, Acacia Coronado, Lindsay Whitehurst, and Jake Blyberg, Associated Press. Police officials who responded to the deadly Uvalde, Texas elementary school shooting waited far too long to confront the gunman, acted with no urgency in establishing a command post, and communicated inaccurate information to grieving families, according to a Justice Department report released Thursday that identifies cascading failures in law enforcement's handling of the massacre. The Justice Department report, the most comprehensive federal accounting of the maligned police response to the May 24, 2022 shooting at Robb Elementary School, catalogs a sweeping array of training, communication, leadership, and technology problems that federal officials say contributed to the crisis lasting far longer than necessary. All the while, the report says, terrified students inside the classrooms called 911 and agonized parents begged officers to go in. Had law enforcement agencies followed generally accepted practices in active shooter situations and gone right after the shooter and stopped him, lives would have been saved, and people would have survived, Attorney General Merrick Garland said Thursday at a news conference in Uvalde after Justice Department officials briefed family members on their findings. The Uvalde victims, he said, deserved better. Even for a mass shooting that has already been the subject of intense scrutiny and in-depth examinations, an earlier report by Texas lawmakers, for instance, faulted law enforcement at every level with failing to prioritize saving innocent lives over their own safety. The nearly 600-page Justice Department report adds to the public understanding of how officers failed to stop an attack that killed 19 children and 2 staff members. The flawed initial response was compounded in the following days by an ineptitude that added to family members' anguish, according to the report. One family member spent hours pulling glass out of an injured son's body because some of the surviving children had not been screened for medical care. A county district attorney told families that they would need to wait for autopsy results before death notifications were made, prompting someone to yell, "What? Our children are dead? No, no." Hospital staff, untrained in delivering painful news, told some family members that their loved ones had died, while in other cases, families received incorrect information suggesting that a child had survived when they had not. At one point, an official told waiting families that another bus of survivors was coming, but that was untrue. Mirroring the failures of law enforcement response, state and local agencies failed to coordinate, leading to inaccurate and incomplete information being provided to anxious families and community members and the public, said Associate Attorney General Vanita Gupta. The law enforcement response was massive, comprising at least 380 personnel from 24 local, county, state, and federal agencies. But the problems began almost immediately with a flawed assumption by officers that the shooter was barricaded or otherwise contained even as he continued to fire shots. That mindset permeated throughout much of the incident response as police, rather than rushing inside the classrooms to end the carnage, waited more than an hour to confront the gunman in what the report called a costly lack of urgency. The gunman, Salvador Ramos, was killed roughly 77 minutes after police arrived on the scene, when a tactical team finally went into the classroom to take him down. An active shooter with access to victims should never be considered and treated as a barricaded subject, the report says, with the word never emphasized in italics. In other errors, the report says police acted with no urgency in establishing a command center, creating confusion among police about who was in charge. The then school district police chief, Pete Arredondo, discarded his radios on arrival, deeming them unnecessary, though he tried to communicate by phone with officers in the school hallway. Unfortunately, on multiple occasions, he directed officers intending to gain entry into the classrooms to stop because he appeared to determine that other victims should first be removed from nearby classrooms to prevent further injury. Uvalde, a community of about 15,000, about 85 miles southwest of San Antonio, continues to struggle with the trauma left by the killings and remains divided on the issue of accountability. Uvalde County District Attorney Christina Mitchell has said she's still considering whether to bring criminal charges. President Joe Biden said in a statement Thursday that the report identified multiple points of failure that hold lessons for the future, and that no community should have to go through what Uvalde did. Obituaries and death notices. Christina Joy Lineback. Christina Joy Lineback, 28, of Midland, Texas, passed away suddenly on Thursday, January 11, 2024. Christina was born in Dallas, Texas, and grew up in Midland with her adoptive family. She is survived by two children, Elena and Jacoby, her parents, Dr. Wilbur and Tina Lineback, two sisters, Jayade Hearn, Holly Ann Moffitt, two stepsisters, Christina Estes and Amanda, and she is preceded in death by her grandmother, Louisa Lineback. Funeral services for Christina Lineback will be held at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday, January 20th, 2024, at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, located at 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas. Visitation will precede the service from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Saturday. George Patrick Watts. George Patrick Watts, 81, passed away on Thursday, January 11, 2024. He was born on September 9, 1942, in Amarillo, Texas, to the late James Doyle Watts and Beulah Enda Brussell. Rosary and funeral services were held on Friday, January 19, 2024. William Edgar Bowling. William Edgar Bowling, 82, of Midland, Texas, was called to his heavenly home on January 16, 2024. Ed was born on September 25, 1941, in Dunbar, West Virginia, to William G. and Pearl Hartley Bowling. Left to cherish his memory are his daughter, Karen Ann Bowling Sparks, one grandson, two granddaughters. He is preceded in death by his parents, Bill and Pearl Bowling, wife of 49 years, Kathy, their infant daughter, Elizabeth, and sisters Diane Bowling Bellamy and Gloria Bowling Tribo. The family will be receiving guests from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland, Texas, on Friday, January 19, 2024. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 20, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel, with a reception to follow at the branch. Live streaming at the time of the service will be available at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to Midland Fair Havens, 2400 Whitmire Boulevard, number 100, Midland, Texas, 79705, or a charity of their choice. James Lewis May, Ph.D. James Lewis May, Dr. Jim, died on January 12, 2024, in Wimberley, Texas, after a lengthy battle with cancer. He was born on October 29, 1943, in Houston, Texas, the son of Loretta Henderson May and James Allen May. He is preceded by his parents, sister Regina Cantwell, and son Lewis Henderson May. Dr. Jim is survived by his wife Elizabeth O'Brien May and three children, Travis May, Jonathan Barrow May, and Meredith May Peeler. He also had six grandchildren. A memorial service will be held at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church on January 27th at 2 p.m. In lieu of flowers, if you wish to do so, please make contributions to St. Stephen's Episcopal Church or St. Stephen's Episcopal School, Wimberley, Texas, or to the charity of your choice. Sandra K. Closel Sosley. Sandra K. Sandy Closel Sosley passed away December 28, 2023 in Houston after a courageous battle with leukemia. Sandy was born November 22, 1955 in Pasadena, Texas, to Leslie Faye Brewer Closel and Joseph A. Closel, Jr. Sandy is preceded in death by her parents and brother Mark James Closel. She is survived by brother David Closel.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for January 18, 2024 by Mike Aldex. A new fire safety trailer will educate the public on fire safety and prevention in Eddy County. Eddy County Fire and Rescue recently acquired the 29-foot community fire safety trailer, which features multiple interactive exhibits that simulate real-life fire scenarios. Exhibits include a kitchen fire simulation, a smoke-filled room, and a fire extinguisher training session. The trailer will be available for community events, school visits, and other public gatherings, said Joshua Mack, Eddy County Fire Chief. Our goal is to partner with our community to assure our citizens are capable of managing an emergency until help arrives. With this tool and our fire extinguisher and smoke detector installation program, we feel we can accomplish that goal to prevent severe injury and death. The trailer was funded with $150,000 in capital overlay, along with a $130,000 donation from Chevron's Carlsbad operations and $44,000 from Eddy County. District 66 Representative Jimmy Mason said, "The project shows cooperation of our legislature and the private industry. Chevron is a great supporter of our community. It's amazing what we can get done when we bring all of our resources together," Representative Mason said. "I think this will be a great asset for our school system and teaching our children about fire safety. Now we just need to make sure it is put to good use. Our school children will have a hands-on opportunity to prepare for any fire emergency in their home, including workplace fire preparedness, only enhances the usefulness of the trailer." Jason Rosander, Chevron's Permian Basin Emergency Management Advisor, said Chevron is proud to help bring this new resource to the community. "Chevron is proud to collaborate with Eddy County in educating the public on fire safety and prevention, and this trailer will do that in a unique and interactive way," Rosander said. Odessa to Fund Free Diabetes Clinic, January 17, 2024, by Mike Aldex. Odessa residents struggling to afford health care will soon have access to a free diabetes clinic. The Odessa Mayor and City Council recently voted to designate $500,000 in Federal American Rescue Plan Act funds, ARPA, to open the clinic in a partnership with the Medical Center Hospital System, MCH. The clinic will open at the site of the former MCH Urgent Care Clinic at 1940 East 42nd Street, near Permian High School, according to the current plans. The Urgent Care Clinic was shut down during the COVID pandemic, according to the city. Offering 9 rooms for patients, the free diabetes clinic will provide an invaluable service to those who lack adequate health care, said Odessa Councilmember Mark Mata. In addition to treating patients, the clinic will serve as a training grounds for up-and-coming physicians, the city said. At the onset, the clinic will open on a limited number of days and hours, according to the city. Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven, a diabetic and cancer survivor, said there's a need to fill a gap in education in the areas of diabetes, hypertension, and high blood pressure. I'm committed to improving the knowledge and pre-diagnosis in these areas for the segment of our citizens in Odessa who have limited access or no access to pre-treatment, the mayor said. The City of Odessa and MCH social media pages will provide updates on when the clinic will open. Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. 4-star hotel proposed for downtown Midland, January 17, 2024, by Mike Aldex. A 4-star hotel project that pays tribute to the Permian Basin's oil and gas industry legacy is being proposed for downtown Midland. The Hotel Santa Rita, named after the legendary oil well Santa Rita No. 1, which provided the first proof that oil existed in the Permian Basin, is proposed to be located across from Centennial Park at 300 West Texas Avenue. Plans call for 135 rooms, an 8,000-square-foot ballroom, 4 separate meeting rooms, a 4,000-square-foot restaurant and bar, and first-floor retail. An 800-space parking garage would be open to the general public, not just to hotel guests, according to the project website. Project partners, which include local investors, major downtown employers, and foundations, anticipate planning, designing, and construction of the project to take 36 months, with an anticipated opening of the hotel in late 2026 or early 2027. The hotel's name pays tribute to the Permian Basin's energy legacy and also embodies the hardworking spirit that defines West Texas, said Al Escamilla of Escamilla Media, a spokesperson for the project. Just like our oil-producing community, this remarkable hotel will be built to impress and designed to exceed your expectations. Escamilla said. The hotel project would complement and further enhance and revitalize downtown that consists of the thriving Bush. Convention Center and Centennial Park, according to project officials. It will bring economic benefits to the city for years to come, they added. The Hotel Santa Rita is an investment in our future, giving our residents a place we can be proud of to host business partners, family, and friends. It will also be a space for families to utilize and celebrations to be held, the project website states. It is the perfect spot for Midlanders and travelers from around the world. Follow at Hotel Santa Rita Midland on Instagram and Facebook for updates. Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. Odessa Mom author's second book about troll with heart of gold, January 16, 2024, by Kathy Chateau. When Rosie Tally was a little girl, she had a collection of tiny trolls with fuzzy hair and mini belly buttons. Growing up, she also had a dream to write children's books someday. Today, Tally is mom to a 3-year-old daughter and has realized her dream by authoring 2 children's books centered on her character, Linus the Troll. While her first self-published book, Linus the Troll, came out in February 19, 2021. Her newest one, Linus the Troll, The Isle of Huggles, is set for a publication February 8th this year and is geared towards the 9 and under set. Tally, whose birthday is the same day as our second book's release date, joked that it is like a birthday present to myself. While Tally has always had a penchant for trolls, the inspiration for Linus arose not from her own childhood obsession, but rather from reading the Norwegian fairy tale, Three Billy Goats Gruff, to her daughter. Readers will recall that things don't turn out so well for the troll in the fairy tale, and that didn't sit well with Tally. I found myself feeling sorry for the troll, said Tally, who added that she was thinking he was just misunderstood or maybe just judged by his appearance. It was this experience of reading to her daughter and sympathizing with the troll that made Tally decide to make her dream of becoming an author a reality. Thus, Linus the Troll was born, brought alive in illustration by Romanian-based artist Anna Benzetti. But if you think Linus is like any scary old troll, think again. Tally said he may look scary with long, sharp nails and warts on his feet, but he doesn't mean any harm to anybody. The author continued that her troll is very kind, even though people's initial reaction to him might be a little bit off-putting. You just need to get to know him, adding to Linus's soft interior is his friendship with a pet bunny named Hops. Tally, an Odessa resident of 17 years, said Linus the Troll, The Isle of Huggles, is a standalone book. While her first book was an introduction to Linus and offers the comparison between his kind heart and his outward appearance, the second book involves an adventure to the Isle of Huggles with his bunny bestie Hops. There, they meet creatures called Puggles, and all sorts of fun ensues. The author said that writing her Linus series has definitely been a dream come true for her and has far exceeded her expectations. As a new writer, she said she didn't expect to sell many books at first, but that the public's excellent reception to it has been mind-blowing. My heart is just so full. So, does the Odessa author have any advice for budding writers? Tally advised aspiring writers to practice writing every day, even if it's just 5 minutes in a journal, and to read a lot to become exposed to different writing styles and to find your own voice. In terms of publishing your work, she said that most people don't realize how much marketing is involved in getting your work out there. So she suggests that a public speaking or marketing class would be helpful. Follow Rosie Tally on Facebook or Instagram and find her Linus the Troll books online, such as on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other sellers. Find this story in Audio for Blind and Low Vision Adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream. Wheel of Fortune's live tour coming to Permian Basin. January 16, 2024, by staff report. Wheel of Fortune Live is coming to the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center in Midland on Friday, February 16th at 7:30 p.m. Wheel of Fortune Live tours North America to provide an opportunity for fans of the popular game show to win prizes in their hometown theater, according to the game show's website. It will not be broadcast or appear on television, and Pat and Vanna will not be on the tour. Participating hosts are, however, familiar television and media personalities. On-stage contestants are selected at random from among those who register. Audience members are selected at random to play games and win prizes during the show. Find this story in Audio for Blind and Low Vision Adults, 2 p.m. daily, on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream.
Hi, my name is Hannah. I'll be reading Permian Proud, Salvation Army Working to Keep People Warm During Winter Cold. This was published on January 12, 2024, and written by Mike Aldat. The Salvation Army is working to help those experiencing homelessness survive the winter cold at night and also during the day by providing local warming stations and adding shelter beds. Its services will be available in Midland and Odessa ahead of an Arctic front that will cause temperatures to dip into the 20s on Saturday and the lower teens on Sunday and Monday. Wind chills around 0 degrees are possible. Bitter cold wind chills and pipe-bursting temperatures will be possible, the National Weather Service reported. At 600 East Wall Street in Midland, an additional 70 emergency cots are available at the Salvation Army shelter during inclement weather, in addition to the 70 beds available year-round, according to Captain Robert Corriston. Its warming station is open anytime temperatures reach 42 degrees or below. We will do our best to make sure everyone has a warm, safe place to sleep and no one is left outside exposed to freezing winter weather, Captain Corriston said. We currently have 78 people staying in our shelter, including men, women, and families. The Salvation Army's Odessa location, 811 East 10th Street, is also opening as a warming station with sheltering services, offerings of free coats and hot dinners weeknights from 5 to 6 p.m. The Salvation Army of Odessa is partnering with the Salvation Army of Midland and Jesus House, his kitchen and pantry, to help the unhoused. Corriston added, as temperatures drop, we recognize the critical need for our services, particularly for our most vulnerable neighbors facing real life-threatening challenges. Because the Salvation Army is embedded in the communities where it serves, teams are already on the ground and can respond immediately when a disaster strikes or weather suddenly turns. Donations are critical to ensuring the Salvation Army can support our neighbors in need. To make a donation or for more information about the warming station and inclement weather shelter, call the Salvation Army of Midland at 432-683-3614. Visit www.salvationarmymidland.org or stop by 600 East Wall Street in Midland. You can similarly contribute at the Odessa location by visiting 811 East 10th Street or calling 432-332-0738. Find the story and audio for the blind and low vision adults 2 p.m. daily on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream.
Health and science. Is it time for a Surgeon General report on vaping? New York. 60 years ago, the U.S. Surgeon General released a report that settled a long-standing public debate about the dangers of cigarettes and led to huge changes in smoking in America. Today, some public health experts say a similar report could help clear the air about vaping. Many U.S. adults believe nicotine vaping is as harmful as, or more dangerous than, cigarette smoking. That's wrong. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration and most scientists agree that, based on available evidence, electronic cigarettes are far less dangerous than traditional cigarettes. But that doesn't mean e-cigarettes are harmless either. And public health experts disagree about exactly how harmful or helpful the devices are. Clarifying information is urgently needed, said Lawrence Gostin, a public health law expert at Georgetown University. Quote, there have been so many confusing messages about vaping, end quote, Gostin said. Quote, a Surgeon General's report could clear all that up, end quote. One major obstacle. E-cigarettes haven't been around long enough for scientists to see if vapors develop problems like lung cancer and heart disease. Quote, there's a remarkable lack of evidence, end quote, said Dr. Kelly Henning, who leads the public health program at Bloomberg Philanthropics. Smoking and vaping. Cigarette smoking has long been described as the leading cause of preventable death in the United States. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention puts the annual toll at 480,000 lives. That count should start to fall around 2030, according to a study published last year by the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, thanks in part to decline in smoking rates that began in the 1960s. Back then, ashtrays were everywhere, and more than 42% of U.S. adults smoked. On January 11, 1964, U.S. Surgeon General Luther Terry released an authoritative report that said smoking causes illness and death, and the government should do something about it. The report is considered a watershed moment. In the decades that followed, warning labels were put on cigarette packs, cigarette commercials were banned, governments raised tobacco taxes, and new restrictions were placed on where people could light up. By 2022, the adult smoking rate was 11%. Some experts believe e-cigarettes deserve some of the credit. The devices were billed as a way to help smokers quit, and the FDA has authorized a handful of e-cigarettes as less harmful alternatives for adult smokers. Vaping's popularity exploded in the 2010s among both adults and teens. In 2014, e-cigarettes surpassed combustible cigarettes as the tobacco product that youth used the most. By 2019, 28% of high schoolers were vaping. U.S. health officials sounded alarms, fearing that kids hooked on nicotine would rediscover cigarettes. That hasn't happened. Last year, the high school smoking rate was less than 2%, far lower than the 35% rate seen about 25 years ago. Quote, that's a great public health triumph. It's an almost unbelievable one, end quote, said Kenneth Warner, who studies tobacco control policies at the University of Michigan. Quote, if it weren't for e-cigarettes, I think we would be hearing the public health community shouting at the top of their lungs about the success of getting kids not to smoke, end quote, he said. Benefits and harms. Cigarettes have been called the deadliest consumer product ever invented. Their smoke contains thousands of chemicals, at least 69 of which can cause cancer. The vapor from e-cigarettes has been estimated to contain far fewer chemicals and fewer carcinogens. Some toxic substances are present in both, but show up in much lower concentrations in e-cigarette vapor than in cigarette smoke. Studies have shown that smokers who completely switch to vaping have better lung function and see other health improvements. Quote, I would much rather see someone vaping than smoking a Marlboro. There is no question in my mind that vaping is safer, end quote, said Donald Shopland, who is a clerk for the committee that generated the 1964 report and is co-author of a forthcoming book on it. But what about the dangers to people who have never smoked? There have been 100 to 200 studies looking at vaping, and they are a mixed bag, said Dr. Neil Benowitz of the University of California, San Francisco, a leading academic voice on nicotine and tobacco addiction. The studies used varying techniques, and many were limited in their ability to separate the effects of vaping from former cigarettes smoking, he said. Quote, if you look at the research, it's all over the map, end quote, Warner said. Studies have detected bronchitis symptoms and aggravation of asthma in young people who vape. Research also indicates vaping also can affect the cells that line the blood vessels and heart, leading to looks for a link to heart disease. Perhaps the most cited concern is nicotine, the stimulant that makes cigarettes and vapes addictive. Animal studies suggest nicotine exposure in adolescents can affect development of the area of the brain responsible for attention, learning, and impulse control. Some research in people suggests a link between vaping and ADHD symptoms, depression, and feelings of stress. But experts say that the research is very limited and more work needs to be done. Meanwhile, there's not even a clear scientific consensus that vaping is an effective way to quit smoking, with different studies coming up with different conclusions.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.